You're listening to Stumptown Trade Review, coming to you from the Stumptown Comics Fest. We're here with Matthew Southworth. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And thanks for having me. No problem. You are currently the artist on Stumptown. Tell us a little bit about Stumptown. What is it?
Stumptown is a detective story about a woman named Dex Perrios. Takes place in Portland, and it's written by Greg Rucka. It's told in 4-issue chunks, each chunk of which is a case. And Dex has a gambling problem. She has a mentally challenged brother that she's taking care of. And she's a really great person who can't get her shit together.
So, you know, you mentioned something really important here, is that this story takes place in Portland, hence the name Stumptown. You're not from Portland, and so how is it that you've managed to capture Portland so well? Because as a, you know, local boy and someone who reads it, you've kind of got Portland nailed here. So how have you gone about overcoming that challenge?
I guessed. No, I do a lot of research. I take a lot of photographs. I do a lot of reading on the city. And I live in Seattle, which is roughly similar. And the more industrial parts of Seattle, there's an area called Georgetown, remind me a lot of Portland. So I'm able to get the character of an area just by thinking about a place that I know well, like Georgetown. And then I'll come down here, I'll take a lot of photographs, I'll do a lot of reference to try and get the details of that right.
And so where did you come up with some of the character designs for Dex and her brother and some of the people that she comes into contact with?
I don't really know how to answer that. I just came up with them. Actually, Ansel, her brother, is the hardest character to draw. He's really, no pun intended, he's really challenging because he has Down syndrome. It's hard to do that and not caricature him. There's a lot of weird character. Like, I learned a lot about people with Down syndrome by figuring out, okay, what actually defines the look of someone who's suffering from, I don't know how you say suffering from this illness, but, you know, who's experienced this. And so he's the one character that I consistently struggle with. You know, I also haven't drawn him that much yet. So, but Dex, I knew she had dark hair. Their family is Greek, so most likely she would have dark hair. I knew that she probably had a jacket that once upon a time she spent a lot of money on. Like the first, she doesn't have many things she spent money on. So I think she bought this, she bought this jacket and she wears it all the time because she loves it. You know, I'm really talking about myself here.
It is a lovely coat you're wearing today.
Well, thank you. No, this one was cheap. But last Christmas, my mom gave me some money to buy a good leather jacket. And so now I have this leather jacket that I would never have bought on my own, but I really kind of, I'm excited about it, you know? It's my jacket. So I feel like Dex kind of has that too. She's got three or four things. She has a big screen TV at home. I know that she saved and saved and saved, and she really cares about that TV. I've never said that to Greg. I don't know if he agrees, but that's how it is.
So, you know, part of the challenge of writing such a deeply noir-type detective story is balancing the visuals so that it you know, pays homage to sort of those old noir movies, but without sort of becoming a caricature of that. How do you balance that in your artwork? How do you determine your shots, if you will?
Well, I don't think a lot about about those noir films. In fact, when I first started working on the book, they said to me, it's not noir. It's a crime story, but it's not noir. Now, I think that the way I'm approaching the artwork is pretty noir anyway. And I'm a film fanatic. Like, I'm big time into film. But the guys that I'm mostly interested in, I like the way Orson Welles shoots. But he shot. But his films aren't noir films. They just have some characteristics that are similar. So I think about that stuff a lot. I try and frame things as emotionally as I can, both literally framing them and figuratively framing the way I'm approaching the story as emotionally as I can. And, you know, every once in a while I actually find myself crying over something, which I figure I'm hitting some kind of subconscious nerve somehow in my own art. So hopefully I'm hitting that with other people. That's a long way around of saying that I try not to refer to the genre at all. That's the simple answer. I try not to refer to the genre.
So right now, I mean, like I said, this is sort of what you're known for at the moment. And you said this is coming out in 4-issue chunks for stories. Are you going to be taking a break in between the 4 issues and working on something else? Or do you have more projects coming out? Or are you Stumptown for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, no, I'm sticking with Stumptown for as long as I can, which I assume will be a while. I keep getting faster. So I may be able to take other work that will help supplement my income because it's, you know, it's a successful book, but we're not making a fortune on it. And so my intention is to do other things that permit me to do Stumptown, not to use Stumptown to permit me to do other things. I'm writing a story called The Loudermilk Brothers. It's about a couple of singing brothers in 1950s Tennessee. And that's something that I want to do myself at some point. But for now, I'm just working on Stumptown. There will be a little bitty break after issue 4 is done, but that's really just a, like, trying to recuperate kind of thing. You know, I'm not going to Acapulco or anything.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to wrap this up, and we're going to wrap it up the way we usually do by asking you, what's your issue? What is that comic book issue that you've read sometime that was so wild, so crazy, or so amazing that you just feel like you have to share it with everybody?
Okay. When I was a kid, I subscribed to one comic in my lifetime, and that was Doctor Strange. And I don't know why I subscribed to Doctor Strange, because I never even really loved it, but I did for some reason. And I got this issue, and there was an issue, a fill-in issue by this artist, Carl Potts. He was also the editor. And it was good. It was really cool. That was, I think, issue 63. Issue 64 came out, and it had artwork by this guy, Tony Salmons. And it was so primitive and so terrible that I was furious. I was furious that I was paying money for this. I remember saying, this guy can't even draw. Tony Salmons is the worst artist alive. Well, so that issue went away, and then upcoming issues were drawn by Paul Smith, who drew the X-Men. I loved Paul Smith, but I hated that Tony Salmons. But over time, I'd find myself going, what was the deal with that issue? And I'd go back and I'd look at it, and I'd be like, oh, it's terrible. I can't even look at it. A couple years later, I'd look at it again, and I go, well, that panel's cool, but the rest of it's terrible. This kept going, and it kept going. And Tony Salmons is now maybe my favorite artist. And I've told him this story, too. And he says, yeah, a lot of people have this reaction to my art. What's the word I'm looking for? Undisciplined in his artwork. So it goes all over the place. And you can read his moods as he's making the page. So each page of Tony's work, both in that Doctor Strange thing and in the stuff he does today, it's like a diary of his day. If he wrrote down how frustrated he was at 2:37 in the afternoon, you can see that almost written, like in almost in text, in a panel of a page. So Doctor Strange 64 was the beginning of me kind of learning that comic art could be personally expressive and not just cool.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you sitting down with us today, and all the best to you and continued success with Stumptown.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.